This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Well, happy new year, my good friends, and welcome to 2024. Just do it. Got to get started. Start the year. And my friends, if you have not began a saving and investing plan, now is the time. What you want to do, this is, you know, better than a gym membership, I shall say. You got to set it and I'm going to say forget it, although I don't agree with the forget it part, because you want to set it and then reset it upward as your income goes up. But it's so important to save money as you receive it. Every paycheck, you must put money aside and invest it. The sooner you start, well, the sooner you're going to build wealth. And I repeat, $5 a day invested at 9% for a 40-year period, $5 a day. 40 years equates into $740,000, I believe. My friends, please, this is the hard part. It's your commitment to building wealth. Jack and I are going to help you with the themes and bring on great guests like Michael Hainsworth. He's, in fact, a contributing editor and host of Where's My Jetpack, formerly of BNN. Michael, do you not agree with me the importance of saving consistently and starting early?
My favorite analogy comes from, of all people, David Letterman. He had a great line that I think applies to investing. Investing is like barbecuing. You need to keep an eye on it.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. Now, you know, it's funny. I'm going to tell you, Michael, I've taught you, I shall say, and you're a great student. I taught you how to make a steak. And
you did.
I did. And I take, and you're a good student. I see your steaks posted. They look excellent. Michael Bourdain put up a great post, and it basically is, don't with it. Don't with it. You know what I mean? 10 minutes after you cook that steak, you leave it the alone. Leave it the alone. That's what Michael, what's his name? Bourdain. Anthony Bourdain said, leave the steak alone. Let it rest.
Save with investing. Well, if you can't rush it, it's a process. It takes time, regular savings. And the new year is a great time to get started, as you said.
Yeah, so keep your eye on it, but don't overhandle it. And every now and then you got to let it rest and then you can enjoy it. But again, you know, the problem with investing with a high probable outcome, it is boring, but that's fine. No one said it's supposed to be exciting. Boring does win. And you got to log time, my good friends. You got to log at least 20, 25 years of time to build wealth. But once you have it, boy, oh boy. Pop quiz for you, Jack. I want a quick answer. All right. Your buddy, Warren Buffett. What do you think his net worth will increase by this year?
In terms of billions of dollars?
Well, yeah, in terms of dollars, period. All those billions and millions. How much will Buffett make this year, do you think, with his investments growing?
My guess would be $13
billion. You said that, yeah. My guess would have been $10 billion. How long did it take Warren Buffett to accumulate his first billion? I don't know. Do you know the answer to that, Jack?
I don't know, but I'm going to say probably in his 50s, somewhere around there.
Maybe.
And he's generated most of his wealth in the last 10 years. That's with him giving it away. Right?
Yeah, to boom.
Yeah, as he keeps on giving it away.
But that's the point. You know, building wealth is like, planting an oak tree. At some point, those acorns will come down and you'll have a beautiful, majestic tree, but it takes hundreds of years to receive majesty. And, you know, it's sort of like technology. Mike, you're going to like this line. Rob Young, one of our analysts at Canaccord, he's a tech analyst. He's a great analyst. You know, tech is a wonderful industry. It always takes longer than estimated for tech ideas to receive their fruition, right, come to be. But the market also is underestimated and ends up being a lot bigger than expected. And I'm going to go back now to a cell phone. I remember when when cell phones hit the market, I'm going to say 1988, 86, it was always targeted to business owners, executives, never teens, never 18 to 34-year-olds. And people are saying, I don't know if that market will ever become a market because they can't afford the carrier bills. They can't afford the phones. So this is a business tool. Well, fast forward 10 years, fast forward 15 years, and whammo, huge change. So, Michael, I like to do a little diatribe to get the show started, get the juices flowing. You are a tech enthusiast. And we're going to talk a little bit about technology. Our psychic last year said Microsoft is the place to be, along with artificial intelligence. It was a great interview, actually. If you get a chance to listen to our hit with Lynn Nichols, she was fabulous. Following her own intuition, because actually she was an intuition expert. But we like AI a whole lot, but it got a lot of attention last year. And a new year has begun, Michael, and every year in January, the tempo changes from the previous year. Do you think AI, I'm going to open up with, do you think AI is going to be as big of a thing this year as it was last year, Michael?
It's going to be iterative. Artificial intelligence in 2024 is going to be not about just new products, but also new legal issues. You know, we know about the large language models like ChatGPT and how they are trained. They're trained on massive data sets, and the courts are expected to address whether, you know, AI companies are infringing on copyright by training systems with images and words that are scraped from the internet. So we'll be addressing that in 2024, sort of the sober second thoughts to 2023.
Yeah, sir, Michael, Microsoft right now is up against a legal suit on just that. And who's suing them? I just caught that story this week, and I mentioned it on my daily radio hit.
There are a bunch of different people suing Microsoft right now, and it's related enterprise OpenAI because of exactly that concern. Why should an author put their blood, sweat, and tears into a book, into a report, into an art? You know, when we see the latest in the news, someone had to write that. Why should somebody like Microsoft or others be able to take all of that data and use it to train without giving credit or remuneration in some way, shape, or form? The problem is it's going to be incredibly difficult to figure out how to pay someone for their contribution to a large language model, considering it's large. There are so many others involved. You know, what do you want? Do you want a penny and a half for your Stephen King novel? Fine. Here's a penny and a half. We're certainly not going to pay you $50 because we train not only on that one Stephen King novel, but on everything he's ever written and everything anybody else has ever written as well. But I think 2024 is going to be sort of the other shoe dropping on artificial intelligence. Cyber attackers are leveraging AI and enterprise.
That's a scary one.
Well, I'll tell you why it's scary. AI is a black box spitting out answers without us understanding how it came to them. That's gold for hackers. AI must be able to tell us why it came up with the answers it did, and it's not very good at that.
That's Michael. Didn't you, all of us hate when the math teacher said, please explain your answer?
Exactly. And if we don't explain the answer, the future of cyber attacks isn't stealing your data. It's secretly tweaking your algorithm so that it outputs the answers that the bad actors want. Imagine hacking Amazon's recommendation AI to bury the competition and highlight your own products, or being on the other side of that problem. So those are the types of things that we're going to start to seriously address in 2024. And some of the stocks to watch on that front will be Microsoft, because it's got OpenAI in its pocket, Meta as well, and playing catch up is Google. And of course, I mentioned Amazon, and Amazon's in there. A few years ago, I interviewed the chief AI researcher for Amazon, and he told me that he was working on an AI that would send you products without you asking for them.
Come on.
Hey, we notice you tend to buy shirts in January, so I'm sending you three shirts in your size that seem to be about the color you like. If you don't like them, no problem. Just send them straight back. And the expectation is that we'll go, oh, you know what? Of these three shirts, I like one of them. So there's a sale that Amazon wouldn't have gotten if it hadn't have shipped you the three in the first place.
That's absolutely incredible. Apple's Vision Pro. Where does that fit into all of this?
I shot my very first Christmas in 3D spatial video.
Of course you did.
The iPhone 15 Pro is the only one that's capable of doing this right now. But what you do is you set up your phone on a tripod, because when you're watching it back in VR or AR, you know, you want it to be steady so that you don't make the viewer throw up. So you lock that camera shot down, and I locked it down on Christmas morning. And the 15 Pro will use the LiDAR sensor, the laser radar built into it, to figure out what the 3D is, combine that with the other camera lenses that it's got to figure that all out. And then once the device becomes available to the public at large, I will have already had Christmas. Apple sales are down for the fourth straight quarter, longest slowdown since 2001. The iPhone did better than expected and half of overall sales, but it sold $150 million worth of Macs less than expected. Now, Tim Cook wanted sunglasses as the form factor for augmented reality, but he realized he couldn't wait for the tech to catch up. Sunglasses will ultimately replace your iPhone in AR/VR, but until then, the pivot is actually using the Apple Vision Pro $3,500 headset to replace your Mac.
Wow. Michael Hainsworth spending some time with us this new year. He's getting techie with us, and, well, tech does matter. I'm going to take a quick break, get back with Jack Hartle, of course, my partner, Mr. Michael Hainsworth, the editor and host of Where's My Jetpack show, iFi Radio. It's about money, and it's for you. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back. Michael Hainsworth stepping in. Last minute guest. I'm going to throw out a SOS to our loyal guest, shall I say. Don Vilo couldn't join us today. Don Vilo is such a smart, smart market technician. Love having him on the air. But, well, there was a death in his family. His pooch passed. You know, it is what it is. And I have a dog. I'm a dog lover. I love animals, period. But it's amazing the loss that sets into people when they lose their pet. And I've heard many people say, directly or indirectly, that losing a pet was harder than losing a parent, especially a dog. So if you lost a pet recently, my prayers go out to you. And I think the best thing to do is try to get another pet. Keeps you walking, and, well, they're just so lovely. They take your stress down. Eh? A little pet by your side. My dog is always by my side. You have a nice dog, eh, Jack? Does it calm you down a bit?
I don't know about calming us down. He's still 3 years old, so he's pretty busy. But, yeah, he's good for the family for sure.
Yeah, and my daughter is now part boarding a horse. So we have, I think, about a 15 and a half or 16-hand thoroughbred that I get to lease. Lucky me. It's all part of being a parent. It's either hockey or horses, Jack.
For now, I choose hockey.
Michael Hainsworth, host of Where's My Jetpack, former host on BNN, an absolute tech enthusiast, pop culture icon. What do you think of that, Michael, being a pop culture icon? Why not?
I used to describe myself as specialty TV famous, so I don't know if pop culture icon applies, but we'll give it a shot.
Specialty TV famous, wow.
I didn't recognize you until you opened your mouth.
What do you think, Michael, of traditional media in 2024? The change has been radical for the last decade. I think taken by surprise on many, many fronts. Do you think traditional media is going to actually regain any kind of footing in people's lives as being, you know, a relevant source of, you know, good information and entertainment?
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Journalists make terrible business people, and business people make terrible journalists. And therein lies the problem.
That's brilliant.
Is you spend a lot of time at MBA school learning how to run a business, but journalism bears zero resemblance to a traditional operation. And at the same time, the people who know journalism don't know a thing about how to manage people, because all the people that have ever worked in radio, television, print, their bosses have all been garbage can kickers because their bosses were garbage can kickers. And so there's no focus on the individual, and there's very little focus on creativity, on how to leverage the content as a revenue source. Whenever I walked into the boss's office in my 30 years in mainstream media, I would present them with an idea, and it was always a binary outcome. Either it was a yes or a no. It wasn't a no, but let's try this. It wasn't a yes, but let's pull this back. It was binary. And often my ideas got shot down, and it wasn't until I left the business and I was having a lovely conversation with another industry executive who had said to me, Michael, your problem is you presented a content idea to the boss. You didn't present a monetization idea. And I always thought it was the boss's idea to figure out how to make money off my content. And the reason why it got shot down was because they didn't want to do that work, because they don't know how to do that work. So I'm not very confident in 2024.
Very interesting. Well, again, I just see more and more time spent on social media and the power it has, certainly on the demographic that was not really targeted to by traditional media in the first place because agencies couldn't sell the demo. And that was 12 to 24-year-olds. That was a terrible demo to target. It was the baby boomers that media wanted to target. And that, I think, in itself, is part of the issue at hand. But anyways, the world is moving forward, and technology can be daunting. But you put it great a few weeks ago with us, Jack, and Jack really resonated. Why don't you paraphrase what Michael said about artificial intelligence a couple of weeks ago with us?
It augments our work, right?
Yeah,
allowing us not only to create content. You have to create your own content, but use artificial intelligence to really refine it and make it better.
Yeah, and then it can learn from you. So you use it. It doesn't use you. It's all about, I think, empowerment. But what do you build upon that, Michael?
I think what people fear is that artificial intelligence is going to replace their job. And for some people, it will. There's no two ways about it. You know, the loom replaced the weaver, that kind of thing. And the Luddites rose up and tried to smash the looms as a result. But the reason why they did that was because those who owned the looms were trying to replace the individuals, not augment what they were already capable of doing. And they were trying to cut them out of the picture. There's a lot we can learn from the Luddites when it comes to artificial intelligence. If you are going to be a stick in the mud about it, if you're that type of person who says they don't want to learn something new, let the kids figure that out. I've learned everything I'm going to learn. Well, then, yeah, AI is going to replace your job. But if you're the kind of person who is willing to embrace change and grow with your career, you will find that if you use artificial intelligence to augment your world, then you are more inclined to be more valuable to the boss than someone who refuses to work with AI. So the example that we had cited the last time we had spoken still applies, and that is that today, for example, I just delivered to a client some content, and as part of that, it includes a 500-word summary. I've spent so much time working on this, I'm bleary-eyed. I can drag and drop the transcript of the interview into ChatGPT, tell it to give me 500 words, cite some of the more poignant quotes from the conversation. And then when I take that output, that final product, it's not the final product. It is just my starting point for me to edit and revise that content. So instead of spending an hour working on something, I can spend 15 minutes working on it because AI has helped me, and that gives me 3/4 of my hour back to focus on other things that make me better at what I do.
So my business is loaded with emotion, and emotion can be the enemy of success. And we all have our own biases. Jack, you speak about biases a lot. You're really good at that. Blind spots and tunnel vision around various situations.
But the thing is, we all have them. 100%. It's recognizing, being able to deal with them, and then also having tools to deal with your potential biases so they don't affect your investment decisions.
So what Jack and I have been working on truly for over 20 years, and we've actually just put it into motion, Michael, is building what's called a quantitative model, a quant model.
Yep.
And what we've done is we've taken the S&P 500, it's 500 companies, the 500 largest companies in America. That's the index that everyone pays attention to. So again, friends at home, you just learned something. Pay attention to the S&P 500, the 500 largest companies in the world. And what we did with that list is we've taken it, we screened it down from a balance sheet income statement point of view, looking for those companies that can be most efficient with a dollar and generate the highest return on a dollar. So who can manage money well and grow the asset accordingly? So we screened it fundamentally, and then we did what's called a technical overlay. And the technicals will allow us and drive us to when we actually exit a trade. So stock will run up. It will begin to then peak, roll over, give back a little bit, bang, we sell it, according to our technicals. So far, it's actually working very well, Michael. But it's not artificial intelligence. And I'm just wondering when it's going to actually hit Bay and Wall Street, and to what degree. And because again, I asked the same question, can it replace me? I will say, with the rudimentary, although it's not, but the model that we've built, honestly, Michael, in many ways, is actually doing a better job than I. And I'm going to say simply because it's removing my biases and my emotions from the decision-making process. We're talking about driving cars versus, you know, auto landing an airplane. It's remarkable that all planes do land autopilot. So machine lands plane. In terms of driving vehicles, let's go from Bay Street, Wall Street, over now to Main Street. Here your note to me is Tesla is losing crown on autonomous vehicles. What do you mean by that?
Well, China's BYD is already making more electric vehicles than Tesla is. China is already 60% of worldwide sales. BYD eclipsed Tesla in the fourth quarter. So what I'm saying here is, you know, set aside the numbers associated with Tesla's stock. Sure, the stock's through the roof. There's a tremendous amount of momentum associated with it. But I think it's all going to come crashing down in 2024. A year ago, Musk claimed that he would build 2 million cars in 2023. He fell short by about 200,000, despite cutting prices. Imagine how many fewer vehicles would have rolled off the Tesla Gigafactory in Texas had he not done that. But the other issue is that Tesla no longer qualifies for big U.S. discounts because the batteries are not made in America. So people are going to start looking to the traditional automakers to get that big discount because they'll be made in the United States. And they don't come with all of the grime associated with Elon Musk. And the real downfall for Tesla is going to be the 2024 U.S. presidential election.
The word grime is a funny word. I'm going to give you 30 seconds. Let's talk about the U.S. election. How do you see it impacting your universe and what you're paying attention to, Michael?
I don't even know if I could predict, but you know, on the Musk front, Musk is going to be so focused on being an edgelord in 2024.
You know what?
That investors, an edgelord, which is a polite way of saying poster.
Saying what, Michael? And I heard you clear your voice there.
Well, I can't swear on the radio. So let's just say edgelord is someone who likes to be a troll, who likes to say things that are inflammatory. I like to say things just to make other people cringe because they think it's funny. And investors are going to demand that he focus not on Twitter, but on the car company. Because anybody buying a Tesla today knows who Elon Musk is. If you bought one of those vehicles today, you just bought yourself a $100,000 MAGA hat. It's a good thing that Tesla doesn't release a new model every year like every other car company, because you can't tell the difference between a Tesla bought today and one that was bought 3 years ago before we knew Musk is not the genius that he builds himself up to be. So my prediction is he actually quits Tesla in a snit to focus full time on blowing up rockets and democracy.
Wow. You know, every now and then, stepping out in the tail, I'm good with it. Michael Hainsworth, contributing editor, host of Where's My Jetpack, tech enthusiast, and a whole lot more. Public engagements, speaking, emceeing, video expert, audio expert.
Bar mitzvahs.
Was it bar mitzvahs to boot? I want to wish you huge success in 2024, and we'll get you back on Hi-Fi Radio, of course, as the year plays out. Now, I'm going to take a quick break and get back to the show about money with an actuary. We're going to talk about Canada Pension Plan, and we're going to talk about government supplement, old age security, and how you need to build wealth. Tried and true methods by the Wolf on Bay Street. Stay tuned for that.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Rocks.
I have to say, I do think about Eddie Murphy. Want to hear that little opening? Roxanne? God, that was so funny. Great song. Great band, of course, The Police. And, well, we open with some Police. Might as well continue with it. Fred Vitese, a retired actuary and the author of Retirement Income for Life. Met Fred a couple years ago, had him on the show when he was working with Morneau Chappelle, a pension manager and a benefits manager right here in Toronto. But I want to talk to you, Fred, about the Canada Pension Plan. Exciting stuff. And not. But I'll share with the audience and you as well with what I know about it. And then I'll throw it over to you. Number one, I know that if you are a CPP pensioner, you got yourself a 6% raise last year thanks to inflation. And you're going to get another almost 4.5% raise this year. Yes, CPP keeps up with inflation. Oh, that's good. I'll tell you what I really hate about the Canada Pension Plan, Fred, and no one talks about this. I think it's a complete scam. The amount of money I put into it, the amount of money my employer puts into it, and what I get on the back end is pathetic. And I say that because what are the numbers right now? We'll work together as a collective between you, Jack, and I. We'll figure roughly out how much gets put into CPP this year. If you're earning the maximum, what is the maximum for CPP? Probably $66,000 or $70,000.
The maximum last year was $66,500.
There we go. So 66. So if you make $66,000, if you make $66,000, you're going to put in the max. And so at that level, approximately how much do you put in, and how much does the employer put in?
Okay, so at that level, you're putting in about $4,055.
Per year, and half by you, half by the employer.
The employer would match that, so they're putting in the same amount as you are.
No, so you put in, sorry, you put in about 2,000, the employer puts in two.
No, 4,000 each.
Oh my
but
God.
But it's actually increased this year, Wolf. So
oh my God.
The number that Fred
gave you. Are you kidding me?
Went up this year.
No, hold on. So my point, this is what really bought. So now it's $8,000 going to CPP each and every year. Oh my God. And so if you're working for 40 years, which a typical person will do, oh my God, that's a ton of money. I say that, Fred, because if you save $1,000 a month, this math I do have in my head, $1,000 a month, that's 12 grand a year, not eight. $1,000 a month at around a 9% return turns into $1 million after 25 years. And I think it's $4.6 million after 40 years. So in my opinion, I'm going to shave off a third, 4.6, call it 3 mil. At $8,000 a year, you should have $3 million on the back end. Good luck, you ain't coming close. That's the math. Teacher's pension, those teachers, that is a pension. Cato Depot, that is a pension. Canada Pension is a tax. And that's what we've got to start calling it, Fred. Do you agree with everything I've said so far? Or please, tell me I'm wrong and I'm being hard.
Okay, you're wrong on some things. First of all, with respect to the future, you shouldn't be assuming that you're going to have a return of 9%. More likely, you're going to have a return of more like 5 or 5.5%.
No, but stop. Go to Fred, yeah. Stop. You go to my website, wolfgangklein.com. We have compounded money for our clients better than 10% in our growth mandate. The S&P 500 historic return for 75 years is about 11%. Small caps probably closer to 12%. Same with tech. The TSX maybe 9%, 8%. That assumes no bonds.
You're telling me that your clients are investing 100% in stocks.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's more aggressive. But guess what? The last 10 years, bonds have earned zero. So it's been the right call. Now it's a little different kettle of fish. But no, again, the way we manage money, again, on a bespoke client by client basis, with a lot of hand holding and nurturing, we are able to take on more equity risk at the expense of fixed income because A, we contribute, B, we have flexibility, C, we can always change the direction at key turning points in their life. But the answer is yeah. And so I don't think 9% is outrageous.
The longer that you extend your time horizon too, Wolfgang, you're not talking about
correct.
In 2024. I don't know what the return for 2024 is. Neither do you, Wolf, and Fred doesn't either. But if you extend your time horizon, you think 25, 30, 40 years, and you buy into an investment process where you regularly save, which a CPP is doing, then yes, you certainly do increase your probability of getting that, I'm going to say 7, 8, 9, 10% return.
So, Fred, here's one for you. You know this number too, and I think this is from JP Morgan's work that we picked up recently. The worst 40-year return for the stock market has been plus 4%. Plus 4. Worst return, 4%. Best return, mid-double digits. If you extend time horizon long enough, it's a no-brainer, stocks over bonds.
It's a no-brainer over a long period of time.
Yes.
The thing is, so you can use that kind of math if you're 25 years old and you have a 40-year time horizon. If you're 65, you haven't got a 40-year time horizon anymore. You got more like a 10 or 15-year time horizon.
But I'm going to be cute. Does it matter if you're dead? Does it matter at that point?
It matters a lot because if you're saying 40-year time horizon, so you're telling a 65-year-old, you know what, if you wait 40 years, you're going to do fine because there'll be ups and downs in the meantime. And however, if there's a 10-year down, which has happened in the past,
correct,
like 1960s and 70s,
yep,
if there's a 10-year down and you're 65 to 75, you're going to be suffering during that period of time. That's why pension fund managers ever since the 1960s have been investing about 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds. And that's why I'm telling you.
You created the 60-40 portfolio.
Uh-huh.
That's why? Interesting. Yeah. but Fred, I go back to the Canada Pension Plan. Like, why? We're sort of
screwed. Are they talking about the structure of the plan, maybe?
Well, that's just it. The structure is wrong because the way it was created, it's called the... You found
it's the first sin.
Basically, and it was the... which government was in that time, Canadian government? Fred, do you remember what Canadian government created the...
Pearson.
Pearson, that's it. Pearson. Yeah, he should have stuck to airports. He said basically, if you're 66, you're going to start to receive a pension. I don't think you have to log any time. And again, this whole notion of pensions and retirement actually is a German concept. But they knew back then that life expectancy was 66. Let them retire at 65. We got to support them for 1 year. Modern medicine is keeping us alive for 25 years beyond retirement or 20 years beyond retirement. It's all different. But Fred, what really frustrates me is how little we get back in CPP and how much we put in. It is a farce.
I think you're partially right. So let's forget about the return. You can say 9, 9, we're going to say it's more like 5 or 6, but let's forget about that. The reason why, you use the word scam, I think it's a little bit strong, but here's why CPP hasn't been a great deal. When it was first put in 1966, people weren't getting any pension initially because they hadn't contributed yet. The government decided, or some politicians decided by 1976, that people who had been putting money into the plan at 10 years, and a very paltry amount back then, like 1.8%, who'd been putting in for 10 years should get a full pension. So the thing is, that wasn't funded. So that created a big unfunded liability. And the reason why we're still getting a really, and why you have to be putting in so much money today, 5.95%. The reason why you're putting so much today is because we're still funding off that unfunded liability that
right.
was created back in 1976.
So scam. That scam.
And so that's not going to change. I mean, that is.
How long do we have to keep that burden for those people who picked up a pension in 1976 who didn't contribute enough? How long do we have to support that burden?
No, it's going to go on forever.
Forever.
That's right. So as long as
you can't opt out, you're forced to buy into this thing.
Yeah, that's right. So but here's the good news. There's a bit of good news.
Please.
So the enhancement to the plan that was, you know, 2016 or so that the government brought in, where they started to up the contribution amounts and so on, the enhancement is a much better deal because, for example, this year is special because this year we're creating something called the year's additional maximum pensionable earnings. So it goes beyond the $68,000 we just talked about. It's actually going to go to $73,200 is the maximum that you contribute to. So that new tranche between $68,000 and $73,000, you're only putting in 4% as opposed to 5.95%. And that is actually ends up being a pretty good deal.
Yeah. I could do so much better with it. Even at 5%, my friend, let's go. I wish I had my table with me and it's on my website, my compounding table. $8,000 a year at, let's go 4%. I bet you end up with way more money. And I'm going to throw something else at you, Fred. God rest my brother's soul. I lost Russell a year and a half ago and he just turned 62. He just began collecting his pension for 10 months and he died. Nothing left but a survivor's benefit of $2,500. He paid into that thing for 43 years and he collected for 10 months. Scam part two. Part three, coming up after the break. It's Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. We're talking about Canada Pension Plan. They're going to take more off of you and your employer. And employers don't like that. That's an expense to them as well. Fred Battista knows. He's the actuary. We'll defer to him right after the break. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
One for 19, eh? Never. Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Jack and I wish you a happy new year. Jack and I want you to have more money. Your biggest expense in life is taxes. Yep, it's taxes. Take a look at how much you paid in income tax last year. layer on all those extra taxes that you have to pay. And I'm going to say Canada Pension Plan is a tax you have to pay. I'm going to call that a total tax because you're not getting a good bang for your buck. And, you know, we don't talk about this enough. We really don't talk about this enough. And they're now increasing the monthly contribution that you have to make up to the tune of $4,000, $4,050 on $66,000 of earnings. That's a lot of money. And I can see why, you know, if you're making $66,000, I can see how there'd be nothing left at the end of the day. Yet, the wealthy barber and the wolf on Bay Street say you still have to save something. And no matter what you make, you must put something aside. You have to do this. There's no way around it. But when they, you know, when the government forces you into these programs, I get cheesed. And if I was getting something generous on the back end, it'd be one thing. But I understand money. I understand time. I understand compounding. And $5 a day at 9% for 40 years is $740,000. $5 a day works out to $5 a day, $60 a week. It's about $4,000. It's actually about $4,000. $5 a day for the year would be about $4,000 a year. That's exactly what you're putting into CPP. That's actually interesting math. And then they put the government, your employer puts in the same amount. So yeah, after 40 years, that should be worth about $1.5 million. Good luck. You're going to take what's the maximum we can you're going to receive upon retirement at 65 if you're a maximum contributor today, Fred, from CPP?
If you retire today at age 65, you would be getting about $16,000 a year.
$16,000 a year divided by 12 is how much a month? 12 is $1,200 bucks.
$1,300 bucks.
$1,300 a year.
Yeah. And then if you're below a certain threshold, you'll get old age security. At 65 or 66, does that kick in? Old age security.
65.
Yeah. Based on previous year's income, that's about $5,600 a year. So $1,200 can between the CPP and old age security become $1,800 a year. And again, old age security was for, you know, those who are elderly, who are, you know, falling below the poverty line. It was not for the average Canadian, let alone guaranteed income supplement. And it's amazing. These plans that were created end up taking on different, they morph themselves and become entitlement to certain people. And CPP you paid into, that's entitlement. Again, old age security is paid from the tax base. Guaranteed income supplement paid from the tax base. Who pays taxes? People who work. So it's just the way she is. But had a call from a client, dinner parties, a few extra ones take place over the holidays. And I am finding, Fred, that the most stressful time when it comes to money and wealth is entering retirement and giving up your cash flow of employment and now relying on your nest egg, including, of course, CPP. And it really, really, really causes people a lot of stress. And again, that's why, you know, reaching out to people like Jack and myself to help you navigate this period of time and bring ease to the situation is critical. And again, if you want to make entering retirement easier, save more in advance of. If you don't save enough, you have something to stress out about. But our clients tend to, you know, be concerned, but our clients are actually all in very, very good shape. And when we show them, you know, how you go about managing a retirement portfolio, it's not that much different than as you're building the portfolio in terms of the risk you take and the strategy that you employ. Because the key is make sure you have enough money that you can live off of, call it 4 or 5% of what's been put aside. If you put aside $1 million, you can extract safely $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Which means if that's not enough to live off of, you then got CPP, and if your income's low enough, you'll still get your old age security. That's sort of how you enter retirement. You need more money, make sure you have more money. What you don't want to do is be drawing money out of your account on a weak tape, and bear markets happen every 4 or 5 years, markets correct 25-30% every 4 or 5 years. And if you're excessively drawing when the market's down and your portfolio's down, you don't have enough capital to bounce back. If you only take out small amounts, you know, even if frequently, if they're small amounts, it doesn't have an impact when the market's down hard. Important stuff. But let's pivot over to CPP. People pay a lot of attention to it. And I find for the most part, people want to collect it sooner rather than later. Human intuition and just, you know, psychology, you know, get from the government while you can, because maybe there won't be anything left down the road. So I want you to speak to that, Fred, the importance of perhaps deferring your Canada Pension Plan, because you actually taught this to Jack and I a couple years ago when you came on our show, and I've been using your work on it for some time. By the way, Fred's work is published, third edition of his book, Retirement Income for Life. Very important book. I suggest you spend some time with it if you're entering retirement, just to help you get a better understanding of how you're going to extract income from your shekels that you've put aside and the nuts that you've buried in your backyard. So let's go back to Fred, CPP. Best time to collect it is when and how?
For the vast majority of people, they ought to be waiting until age 70 to collect their Canada Pension Plan. Do people actually do this? No. Maybe 1 or 2% of the population actually waits until age 70 to collect it. And that's because, you know, the bird in the hand argument is very compelling to a lot of people. And everyone has an anecdote of some uncle or some cousin or whatever who died at 67, 68, and so they really wish that they'd started it earlier. But my numbers aren't based on anecdotes; they're based on statistics and probabilities. For example, if you're a woman age 65, you got about a 25% chance of living until 95. So 25% chance, if you start your CPP early, you're going to be getting a heck of a lot less when you're in your 90s than you would be. So you have to worry about longevity risk, the chances that you're going to live too long. And people don't worry about that enough.
Now, let me pipe in here, Fred, because you're making some very, very important points. Outliving your money is a risk. But the good thing about CPP, and again, I'm going to say there's a 99% chance, not 100, 99% chance it's going to be around for 50 years. And if you defer your CPP from age 65 to age 70, you're guaranteed 30% more.
Forty-two.
Thank you, more. Thank you. Jack said 4 years. So you're guaranteed 42% more. So if you're getting $1,200 a month today, if you don't accept it, if you defer to age 70, you will receive 40%,
17%, but 17%.
Yes, you'll be $1,700 a month. Plus indexed to inflation. So the good thing is, this is guaranteed money, whereas your RSP invested with the Wolf on Bay Street, and this isn't GICs, is not guaranteed. You know, I guarantee you quality business. I guarantee you're going to manage it. And I guarantee you over time, we're going to do a good job for you. But, you know, things I just don't control. Canada Pension Plan, well, this is the government backing it. And the government has a tax base it can lean on, i.e. me, to take more money out of my pocket and give it to you. Does it to me all the time. Yeah, if you defer 5 years, you're going to receive, you said, 42% more. What if you do the opposite, Fred? Because I see people doing this, and I hate it. I get angry at them. I say, you made a big mistake here. I don't know where you got this advice. Collecting it early. If you start at age 60, how much less from that $1,200 a month are you entitled to?
Okay, so you get 30% less if you start at age 60 versus 65. So it's 70% of the maximum pension if you start at 60, and 42% more if you started at 65.
If you start at 60.
I'm sorry, 36% less at each 60.
36. Oh, 36%. So 360 plus another 30 of that, choose another $60, 360, about 420 less. That's a lot. You're actually below $800. So if you collect early, you're going to receive, if you start at age 60, you're going to receive less than $800 a month. If you wait to 65, you'll receive $1,200 a month. And if you wait to age 70, you'll receive $1,700 a month. And again, the important point here is that money is guaranteed for life, plus it's going to be indexed to inflation. My next question to you, if you defer, the monthlies are still indexed to inflation, even though you're not collecting. Is that correct?
If you don't collect it,
if I just decide I'm going to defer from age 60 to age 70, I still participate in that COLA?
So it's even better than that. Even better.
So it's even better. My point.
The thing is, if you start getting your payments, then it increases with price inflation. So if CPI goes up 3%, your pension goes up 3%
automatically.
However, If you defer collecting it, it goes up with wage inflation. Now, wage inflation ends on average ends up being a little more than price inflation. Ends up being about 0.5% to 1% more in a given year than price inflation. So, as a result of which, it's not even 42%. It may actually end up being like 47% better, 49% better at age 70 versus 65. And that's something that most people don't realize.
So I did not know that either. No.
During the time that you're deferring, it's increased by wage inflation. And the last couple of years have been special. Like, this first of all came up last year. Normally wage inflation is higher because of COVID. Some funny things happened in 2022. So there was a big increase, I believe it was 6.5% in pensions and payments. So if you started your CPP in December of 2022, then you got a 6.5% increase in January 2023. However, if you waited until January 2023, you don't get that 6% increase. Instead, you get the increase on wages, which was less. It was more like 4.5%. So here's what happened. If you started in December of 2022 versus January 2023, you not only got more pension, you also got an extra payment because you started in December versus January.
Well, so, big picture, my friends, you're going to be paying more into CPP. Hopefully, we get more coming out of the back end. And if you want to get maximum benefit, defer and live a long time, which means be healthy. Indeed. Listen to Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday right here on 640 Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.